Hello.
Oh, you look like an angel with your pristine white background and your pristine skin. Not that we comment on looks, and your nice blonde hair and your grey jumper. You just look like an angel. And you
Thank
obviously haven't
you.
opened your mouth yet. So,
I don't what?
said, and you obviously haven't opened your mouth yet. So that might change the
Yeah.
game.
Well, do you know my parents used to call me Emma Angel
That's.
until I opened my mouth. I think it was because I was so premature that I didn't even really make any sounds for a while, and then was no like. So they used to call me Emma Angel for like the first couple of months. Then, yeah.
Oh, that's a nice thing to know about you. That's very wholesome. And also, I've seen some pictures of you younger, and you did look like an angel.
I was a little shit, but yeah.
Well, looks are all that matters. That's fine.
Yeah, that's true. That is true.
How are you?
I'm okay. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. Mentally good, physically up and down, but I'll take that as good. I'm good.
Do you feel better now? Everybody knows, because I do.
Yeah, I definitely do. I'm like, yeah, I think. It's kind of like you just feel like there's something that's just unsaid. And you're quite like me. Like, it's not great when you've got something unsaid in any situation. It just feels a little bit like off. And then obviously, when we're like answering questions and stuff on like pregnancy and things, it feels a little bit like you, like you last week.
Yeah. For those of you who haven't caught up, Amelia's
Yeah.
pregnant.
Yeah, I can't remember even what you said on the podcast last week, but I remember
No,
getting off.
someone had asked about pregnancy, and actually, I would have answered it the same, and then I just started laughing. I think I said, "Well, you know, if you were pregnant," and then I was like, "Bah, bah."
For me, for
Yeah.
anyone else.
Or
But
anyone, you know, the
yeah.
proverbial you.
Yeah. Yes, I do feel better. Okay, do you have anything to talk about before we get cracking on the questions?
Oh, I don't know if you've had the same, but I've genuinely had about 8 to 10 questions on MCT oil.
Oh, I've had none.
Oh, interesting. I must have a lot
Interesting.
of Davinia Taylor followers.
Yeah, I feel like
That's
I
where it's all
oh.
coming from, because they've asked me about MCT oil, and then other ones have been like, what's your thought on Will powders? Which, if you didn't know, is the name of her supplements.
Oh my God.
I know. Because at
What
first
are
I
they?
thought, what do I think of willpower? I don't know. Like what kind of question is that? Like, I guess I do have an opinion on it. And then I was like, weird that they've spelt it so wrong. And then I realized, yeah.
Oh, interesting. It doesn't, I mean, what's her ethos? Is she a fat loss ethos, or is she like a wellness ethos?
I think both. So the MCT is like promoting fat loss, and the fact you can get into ketosis. I don't know why I was going to say ketogenesis, but ketosis, like quicker or without cutting out carbs. I don't know. But yeah,
Okay.
she's quite big on the MCT
Oh
hype.
my gosh. Well, no, I've not had any questions about that. Can't wait for your post on it, though.
Yeah, I mean, I guess what's slightly annoying, because I think people are going to jump on that, but there is like some research to support. Like, I mean, you can't completely say that there's nothing there. It's just the effect has been wildly blown out of proportion. Like, there is some research that shows that people who, I mean, most of the research is quite flawed, because it's comparing it to like CLA or something. You know, it's not quite matched. When they compare coconut oil to olive oil, they find that olive oil reduced appetite more than coconut oil, which would be higher in MCTs. But I think then people are going to claim, like, well, coconut oil isn't just MCT oil, which it isn't. But I haven't seen studies that compare directly like MCT oil to a good control group and found positive benefits. But they have shown that like people who consume MCT oil will then eat less afterwards. Saying that, I've not found that the like if I don't know if they even reported on this, like it seems to always miss like total calories. Like, okay, they ate less afterwards, but is it because a normal dose of MCT oil is about 120 calories? So did they eat more than 120 calories less? Like, is it going to be beneficial for fat loss? And some people seem to think that it was an appetite suppressant. It doesn't seem to have appetite suppressant effects. And then the idea is that it slows gastric emptying, but any fat would do that. And then it is a saturated fat. So you're like, do you want that much of it in your diet? But then some studies seem to show that because it's a medium chain fatty acid, it'll be broken down in a slightly different way. It doesn't have the same negative effects as like other saturated fats. I still wouldn't feel comfortable like promoting its daily consumption to anyone, to be honest. But yeah, there's a little bit more nuance, and I don't think people like it would be short-sighted to just be like, it is complete bullshit, and you know, it's a complete scam. Is it massively overhyped? Yes. Would I spend any money on it? No. Would I think very carefully about ever recommending it to clients, especially with this kind of stuff that you know people are going to be taking daily? Like, nah, I wouldn't be convinced that there wouldn't be a long-term cardiovascular risk, especially as most people are eating too much saturated fat already. Would I want to add in 14 grams of saturated fat a day when you want to stay below 20? Like, even if it is being metabolized in a slightly different way, I wouldn't be convinced to do that.
That was all very interesting to me because I don't know the research behind MCT at all. I know what it is, and that's pretty much the extent of it. So that's very interesting. And based on what you said, I also would not be recommending it. Like you said, saturated fat, regardless, it just doesn't make sense. And I also, yeah, it's tough because then it's like, okay, well, you add this much MCT, and I don't know how the her supplements work, but it's like, is it like a spoon of coconut oil or a version of that rice? So is it like a spoonful, and then does it become like a spoonful and a half, and then 2 spoonfuls? Because as you go on with diet, and that's what happens with portion distortion as it is, and you end up consuming 250 calories of MCT calories in the morning, and of course, like there's only so much that that's going to impact your hunger levels, or it doesn't. You said it didn't impact your.
Well, it's interesting, like anecdotally, people are like, oh, well, you know, I put it in my coffee in the morning and then I'm not hungry until lunchtime. And it's like, yeah, but I wonder if you just drank coffee, which we know is an appetite suppressant in the morning without adding 120 calories and making it kind of gross. So that's the other thing. It does also have like a nausea inducing effect and also a bit of a laxative effect as well. So you're like, well, yeah, people probably might experience. And then, you know, there's like the massive placebo effect of, you know, it's oily. So you feel like something's happened. You might feel a little bit sick after. You might not, you know, you might have an appetite suppressant effect. You're being told that you will. You might combine it with coffee. And then it's like all these things. It's like, yeah, well, maybe people will eat less because of it.
Yeah, interesting.
Oh, yeah.
It is genuinely interesting. So, were you going to say something?
No, so I think that's the only thing that's really come up this week. Do you have anything?
No, but I have just finished writing the Nutrition for Fertility lecture for the grads. So grads, that will be recorded tomorrow, so you will have it by the end of the week. And I try not to go down too many rabbit holes, but I was speaking to Hayley on Instagram. I was just like, just go down all the rabbit holes, super interesting. I'm like, yeah, but it's that the plan for these mini series is that they're easily digestible, like applicable things. So I've just finished that, and I went into a bit more detail in terms of things that I've talked, because I talked about this before, but I went a little bit more into detail into things like endocrine disruptors and stuff, which are really interesting, which I think sometimes people like shoo away because of the evidence that's available, but I actually think there's quite some decent evidence there. So that'll be out this week. So that's all I've been looking
Ooh,
at.
very interesting. Okay, good.
Okay, questions. Lena's question. Is there any easy way to access research papers that are on the last slide of each lecture? I've just been pausing the video and then jumping onto Google Scholar to try and find them by typing it in. I would just download the PDF, and you can copy from the PDF and paste them into Google Scholar. Not my first rodeo,
You've
is
got a
it?
PhD, babe.
Honestly, I know, that's what I spent 3 years of my life doing.
Do you know what I was about to say? I was like, if you, because I've noticed this now, it's so much easier to copy and paste stuff. Like, if you take a photo of something and you click it on your phone, it's easier to copy and paste the text. But
Actually,
if
I've
you
never
have the
actually tried
PDF,
it.
yeah, if you have the PDF, obviously it's easier
Ah.
for it.
Okay. Next question. Tracy's question. A couple of questions from the body weight and health lecture regarding liposuction. If a client has had significant weight loss and is left with a stomach overhang, then they have a tummy tuck with some liposuction to give a better shape. Is this as dangerous as they have learned and sustained behavior change?
Yeah, so essentially no, because they've learned and sustained behavior change. But also remember, it's kind of the magnitude, right? Like if they're having like a little bit of liposuction, they're probably not having that many fat cells taken out, which means it's not going to have that much impact on the total amount of fat that they can safely store. So yeah, like both of the things you said, like they've actually changed their lifestyle, they've managed to lose weight and keep it off. And then the fact that, you know, it's not like they're going from having a huge amount of fat then and liposuctioning it all out. Pretty sure that's the technical terminology. They're just doing a little bit. So again, it's the same with like if fat freezing injections, which I highly do not recommend. But if you were going to do something like that, it's not really the same magnitude. Like you're not going to see the same loss of fat cells. So from there are other reasons that you wouldn't do that, and it is very dangerous. But from like a, okay, if this is my capacity to store fat perspective, or to store fat safely perspective, it's not going to have as much of an impact.
Okay, second part of this question, and I'm leaving these ones to you because it's your lecture and you did such a good job on it. The point about being a fat child being better, is this because you lay down the subcutaneous fat cells, which are then available for fat storage as you get older, as opposed to an adult that was a slim child storing fat viscerally as an adult?
Yeah, essentially, what the research seems to show is that you can put down more fat cells when you're younger. Thus, if you had more fat cells, even if they weren't full as an adult, you'd have more capacity to safely store fat. That would, I kind of put that in there as like, it's a bit tongue in cheek. Like, you obviously wouldn't want to make a child overweight so that if they were obese as an adult, they wouldn't have the same complications. Because we know that's definitely going to set you up for obesity as an adult anyway. But yeah, it was just like, it's just more to prove the point, like, okay, if you've got more fat cells, you have more ability to stay safely store fat. Yeah.
Okay, Julie's question. In lecture two, you go through the macronutrients and include fiber. The other thing that usually gets referenced when going through the macros is alcohol. So, wondering if you could do just a bit on that.
What do you want to do on it?
Alcohol is 7 calories per gram, but
Yeah.
that's, there's not really a huge amount else to say on that, is there? Unless, Julie, there's something specific you want to know about alcohol. Aside from the fact it's 7 calories per gram, feel free to put that in the question box. Okay. This is a long one. Kelly has apologized in advance. Now that I've learned more about fitness industry fads, podcasts pushing unhelpful advice, I find that my initial reaction to anything supplement wise or any kind of polarized claim is automatically skeptical. Welcome to the dark side. I'm not sure if it's now becoming a bad thing because I'm not giving others' views a chance, particularly when clients bring it up. I don't want to sound like I'm just shooting them down. I also notice a lot of PTs at my work giving false advice, and I struggle to just sit there and not say anything. I also don't want to sound like I'm putting someone else down either. How have you both navigated this, and how would you go about fully knowing what supplements are good if you can't properly read studies and studies have so many limitations? Would you say that creatine, magnesium, vitamin D, and fish oils are the basic supplements that are worth investing in, and everything else is not going to be that relevant unless there's a specific condition you have? Thank you.
Great question. So, I mean, a good example of this is how I went about looking at MCT oil. I will always go and look for, because my initial thought was, oh, we've looked at this before. Same with when coconut oil was a big thing and blah, blah, blah. And it's totally useless. And so I was like, well, before I say any of that, let me go and try and find evidence for it. So I would always do that first. Like, if you're like, oh, this supplement sounds a bit shit, go and try and find the supportive evidence for it. And then you're well equipped as well, because someone will be like, you know, I know if I start talking about MCT or someone's going to come back and be like, well, have you seen this study? And I can be like, yes, I have actually. I have seen that study and it doesn't compare it to a control group. That's why I haven't spoken about it, or, you know, whatever the context might be. Then you've actually done, you know, your job of finding the evidence for it. I think if you look for reasons why you might be wrong, you're much more likely to come up with like a more rounded view, because we all have our own biases. And I agree, like, I'm the same. As soon as someone messages me, what do you think about this supplement? I'm like, I can almost guarantee it's going to be bullshit, but I still look at it and I'm like, okay, well, actually, you know, it's got some vitamin D in, which might be good. Oh, hey, look, they put a bit of creatine in, but it's massively underdosed. Or, you know, they've done, like, I'm trying to find, like, why would I support that supplement first? Because that goes against my own bias. The second thing I'll say is, like, this isn't directly related to this, but it did make me think about it yesterday. One of my mates messaged me and was like, you're going to be so proud of me. She's like, I've been going to the gym for the first time in ages. Like, she's really not into the gym. She's like, I've put on 3 kilograms of muscle and I've lost this much fat, and, you know, it's been like 3 months or something. And look, like, here's all, and she was sending me like the, you know, the scales at David Lloyd's gym that had told her this, and then sent me some progress photos. And she's obviously leaner, she's lost fat, she's probably built a bit of muscle. Very unlikely that she's built 3 kilograms of muscle and lost as much fat as this girl said. But there's no way I'm going to go back to her and say, yeah, I'm sorry, but those scales, they're not accurate. And, but, you know, like, literally just shitting on them. Like, I think it's knowing when, you know, all, because all you can do, you can be like, oh, you can obviously see she's making progress. I'm like, I'm so proud of you. That's amazing. So glad that you're getting into the gym. Whatever. She doesn't need to know that technically, like, that might not be exactly the results that you're getting, and you should know about that. Like, it's not the time or the place. Now, I'm sure you wouldn't do that, but it's just a, like, it's an extreme example of, you don't always need to be like, well, that supplement doesn't work. Well, those machines don't work. Well, you probably haven't done that. You know, like, unless you came to me and she said, are these machines accurate? In which case I'd be like, oh, they're probably not. But, you know, like, you can obviously see in your progress photos that you've made huge progress, so who cares? But she doesn't need to know that.
Agreed with all of that. I think, practically speaking, too, if you don't know, going on to something like Examine is a nice kind of baseline to look at. If someone's like, oh, what do you think of MCT or whatever, like Examine usually will have a bit of an overview of the research. That's we would go into it in more depth for certain things, but as a baseline for PTs and coaches who want to know, you know, is the supplement got legs, Examine is a good place to look. Yes, supplement wise, what you said is right. I think don't undersell yourself. You're kind of like, you know all this stuff. You ask great questions in the lives, you do EIQ. To think that you don't know that much, and so you're a bit like, not sure, like, give yourself more credit, because I guarantee you know more than what you think that you do, and more than most people already know. So, like, give yourself that credit. I think it's hard when you're in the gym with other coaches and stuff who are maybe your mates or like your colleagues, and it's hard when you really disagree with some of their stuff that they're doing. I remember when I used to compete and I was teaching nutrition at the uni, and I went to this gym and someone was giving out awful nutrition advice. It was all Poliquin and all this stuff. And they had someone on, like, apparently he had someone on crazy low calories. Now I would not handle this in any way, shape, or form the way that I did then. But at the time, I was like, you can't be doing that to her. Like, that's gonna like mess her up and all this stuff. And he's like, no, but she's not sticking to it, so it's fine, blah, blah, blah. And I had a chat with like the guy who was running the gym, not intentionally about that, but I was like, do you know like the type of the quality of nutrition advice that's coming out from your personal trainers? Like, it's pretty dangerous. Totally on my high horse, sanctimonious arsehole. handle it in totally the wrong way. And like they kind of like they did actually follow up with them and they were like, he said this and that, and it was fine. But for the rest of time in the gym, like I was that dickhead that was like, you're doing things wrong. And I don't think that helped anyone. It didn't help the person involved. And that's the whole point. It's not really about me. But I do think there's a kind of, when you first start to learn stuff, we all do this. We all get a little bit sanctimonious. You're clearly not, Kelly, but like I think a lot of us do get a little bit sanctimonious of like, I can't believe they're doing that. And it's hard when you're around it all the time. I would, if it were me and I, like they were colleagues and people that I liked, I would probably just have a chill conversation, not at the time, of just saying something like, oh, I heard like you were really into this. I was actually looking at this. I would love it if you, like, I didn't think there was any research behind it. I would be totally open if you've got any, would love to know where, like where you got that information from, and just have a really non-judgmental conversation about it. Oh, damn.
It is, yeah. I mean, when I was looking at this MCT stuff, and by the way, I haven't looked heavily into it, but it does just, because when in this question, when it's like, oh, we know that studies have flaws and stuff, and you have to remember as well, like publication bias is massive in supplement research. So when I was finding like, oh, there's like a few studies that show some kind of effects, but most of them aren't, I'm like, there's probably hundreds of unpublished, like, you know, studies that can get published because no journals like publishing, here's some research and it found no effects. Like, but there's probably tons of that. And I guess that's a whole other issue. And you can't really argue it in certain situations. Like, you can't be like, well, there's probably loads, because you don't know that there is, you know. But yeah, it does become a little bit hard, doesn't it? And I guess the other thing when you're explaining supplements, especially when you're someone who's like, generally, I don't recommend that many supplements. I only recommend these ones. And I try and kind of reiterate this a little bit on Instagram when I can, is I'm not selling you anything. I don't get anything from telling you not to take that supplement. Like when you don't buy Davinia Taylor's MCT oil, I don't get your money. You know, I don't get anything from doing that. And I think sometimes people are like, I'm sure I posted something and it was maybe like, I don't think I named her, but it was in reference to some of her stuff. And someone's just like, yeah, why do you feel the need to take down other, and I didn't actually name her, but I was a bit like, what do you think I get from giving out good information? Like, I'm saving you money. Like, why, what do I get from saying don't take athletic greens? Nothing. Like, if anything, negative, right? Because now they're not going to sponsor my podcast, you know. Or, you know, whatever, like we've got mates who recommend that stuff, so it doesn't make us popular. Like, I literally get nothing from it apart from giving out good information and saving you money. And I'd kind of explain that as well, like, not to like shit on other people, but just be like, a lot of the people that are trying to sell you that Herbalife green drink that you don't need get money from doing that, you know, like, and explaining the behind, like, you know, not only do they promote it on their podcast and they'll get paid for the ad, but they probably have commission off the back of that if you've used their discount code or whatever, you know, like, all just explaining that side of things. Or like, look, shockingly, the glucose goddess is going to recommend her own supplement that goes through her business and she makes money from, like, of course she is, right? And to an extent, that's how businesses work, but you have to apply like a skeptical hat when. And it's the same, like, I'm like, oh, like, I'm going to sell you Commit to Six because I think it's great, right? But I'm biased, right? I also get a benefit if you sign up from that. This is, it's kind of like, I mean, it isn't the same because that's actually a good service, but you also have to look at your bias, yeah, or their biases and what they're going to gain from it. And I think just reminding clients to open up their eyes to that, oh, that PT that tried to sell you all that stuff, did it seem like an MLM scheme, or like, were they making money from it? Were you buying it direct from them? Because it's a little bit different if they're like, do you know what? Go to My Protein and buy some creatine. Not, oh, do you know what? I'll get the creatine. You can buy it from me, and it's the Herbalife or, you know, some MLM thing. Like, it's different.
Okay, Libby's question. Just after some advice, please. I'm finding that some of my clients who aren't tracking their calories are slipping through the cracks a little. They have personalized daily habits, their personal daily habits, a step target or movement goal, and access to a load of example meal plans, education and resources. Recently, though, I've had some clients look at their daily habits and go, is this it? I'm struggling to work out whether I'm not giving them enough structure or they're losing interest. So they're losing interest. Do you have any advice or guidance on what you do in this situation? For context, this particular client was skipping meals, relying heavily on ultra-processed food and takeaways, and I felt like tracking wasn't right for her right now. I'm struggling to find a balance between not overwhelming clients like this with too much too soon, but at the same time giving them structure and accountability and feeling like they have something to work towards. Not going to read the last sentence of that question, Libby. Thank you so much.
Does that make sense?
Makes perfect sense.
It does make sense. I'm sure many people can relate to this. I mean, I actually had a similar, not that similar, but a conversation with someone today, like a mentoring client today, about like, no, because she was like, don't you feel like you're changing your approach when you're giving, like, I don't know, someone like tough love and another person another approach or whatever? And I'm like, no, that's emotional intelligence. It's knowing when to push someone, when to pull back, right? With this person, it might be knowing when to give them more structure and a little bit more to action, and when to be like, do you know what? We need to focus this week just on getting 5,000 steps a day. If you do that to somebody else, they'll be like, why the fuck am I paying you any money? Like, I can do that with my eyes closed. What are you talking about? I need to do 5,000 steps a day. I need something harder than that, or I want to do more than that. And you'll have someone else that's like, thank God, like maybe they are struggling with chronic fatigue, and that's what they need to do to get themselves back up to a certain level. They don't want to put on too much pressure, and that's the first step to making a change, and not overwhelm them. But part of that's like knowing what to give your client at the time. Like, that's like the human side of coaching, right? It's not going to be right for everybody. And if you're getting that feedback from that person of there's not enough structure here for me, you can give them structure without making them track calories.
I absolutely agree. I think we used to get this a little bit more in the past. And what I started to do with people I worked with, like when I sent them all their starting information and stuff, because most of them were not tracking, I would say things like, I think in the starting email, I'd always say something like, most of the work that we're going to do together is going to come after we've established these basic things. So this is just the starting point. And I always would try and get ahead of the fact of like, I know you want more, especially if you're working with people who are maybe like those meticulous trackers or those like high achievers, those kind of, hyper aroused, do 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 type of people. And you're like, okay, we're just gonna slow things down and do things like that. Like you have to meet them where they are, and everything you said to them obviously is like bang on. But I think just getting into their head before they can come at you can be quite helpful and help ease it for you, because the next time you send something out to someone, you're probably going to be like, oh, what if I've not done enough? It helps ease it if you're like, look, I know like this looks quite, you don't say this looks basic, but I know you've got the fundamentals here. Loads of the work is going to be in habit development, all of these things. And then I would be mindful of like, I don't know what your type of what your client type is, but there are so many different habits. Like Adam, who runs Pothio, like he has a go at me because we've got so many different types of habits for people that we only use certain ones for certain people, obviously, but we've just made so many. There are so many things that you can track for people that are more holistic for people that love to track. Like they can tick things off like meditation, they can tick things off like one kind thing they've done for themselves that day, they can tick things off like we have like beauty hunting, all these different things, right? It can be anything. If they feel like if they need to have things that they're ticking off and they've got in their diary in the morning, they do 10 minutes meditation and then they go for their outdoor walk in the afternoon. Like, let them tick it all off. If it feels for them that they're doing something more, and of course, like, of course, you can add in more nutrition structure and so many different ways. But don't let one person's feedback, when you coach other people, don't let one person's feedback make you think, oh my God, I'm not doing enough for all of my clients. It's useful. Okay, some types of clients will maybe need that little bit more, but it doesn't mean that you're not doing enough.
Yeah, I really like what you were saying about kind of like setting expectations. Okay, this is stage one. Here we build the fundamentals. Then what's going to happen at stage two, once we've been able to consistently do that for 2 weeks in a row, or whatever the time frame for you is, then we reset, we refocus, and then we're adding in this part or whatever, so that they can see like the journey. Because yeah, if the first part's just like real, quite basic. Or you might say, like, this is why it's different. It might seem basic, but this is why this time's going to be different, because we're building on these habits. I'm not just going to overwhelm you with everything. you can stick to it for 5 days and then you give up because you can't fit it all in. Instead of that, we're going to ingrain these first and then we'll add on top of that. Yeah.
Okay, Natalie's question. I have a few questions, if I may. Of course. Okay, this is a really long bit, so I'll just read until I think it's the end of the question. To give context to the first one, my role is employed in this particular client that I'm struggling with. I work as a well-being coach in occupational health setting, so quite often have a battle as they are being told to lose weight rather than it coming from them. Good context. The guys I'm working with are mainly male who do shift work, long hours, unknown shifts. They have safety limits on machines, and some are above 130 kilograms, which is above the crane limits, so have been put on a lose weight or lose your job scenario.
Oh
Now,
my God.
I know one of them has been seeing me for quite some time with substantial weight loss originally, that he did go to Slimming World was 180 kilograms down to 140. He's now 153 and has very disordered eating habits and mindset. He says he's in a deficit, he doesn't track, becomes obsessed with the calories, and it's almost, I feel, out of scarcity of food. Like looking at it, oh, that's 500 calories, only leaves me with 1,000 or something like that. If his mentally, when looking at the cals, if he's mentally, okay, always feels he's on a diet and said he will always be on one. Struggling to lose the weight, and I don't know where to go with it. It's a big mentality battle, I feel, but one he's not keen on exploring. He says he wants to not feel like he's on a diet, wants food when not hungry, and doesn't always feel full after meals. I have said about volumizing foods, slower chews, being more mindful and present with food, greater protein intake. He has a fear of carbs. I have worked a lot with him to explain what carbs are, what foods they are, and the role they play in our diet. Always has the mentality of quote unquote being good, is fixated on scales, even though we spend every session going over what scale weight means. There's more. He's exercising, but gets hungry after swimming. I have said about surfing the urge, as for a while he was saying it was a treat for exercise. I've also said about having a meal after instead of before. Not sure if this is the right advice. Just a bit stuck as to why someone 153 kilograms isn't losing weight.
Well, because he's not in a deficit, that's not very helpful. But yeah, that's what we know. But I guess that's the start of like, right, he's not in a deficit. What do we need to do to change? I would probably try and unpick like what he feels like on a diet is, and then create a way of eating and a way of living that doesn't feel to him like he's quote unquote on a diet, but that will still put him in a deficit. Yeah. And I'd maybe, you know, like it's going to be, this is quite a hard one because it's so specific to this individual. And to me, it would be like sitting down, talking to him, figuring out what that, like, what does restriction look like to you? Because for some people, that's tracking. For some people, that's not tracking. For some people, that's eating at certain times a day or not eating at certain times a day. For him, there's obviously an issue with carbs there. Maybe it's weighing himself. Maybe it's not weighing himself. You know, would it help to remove the scales for at least a month or 30 days or a period of time? And set new habits in place and really try and focus on like, how can we get you feeling your best? Because then it's going to be way easier. It does sound like he's got like mentally quite a lot of like, whether you want to call it like dieting fatigue, but very negative connotations around dieting. I feel like I'll have to do this forever. And it's like, no, you're going to have to live your life forever. So how do we get you to live your life in a way that's also going to be conducive to you losing some weight for now? But I think I'd come back to more like the lifestyle change, but try and change it into like a positive thing. This is a good thing, you know, not because at the moment he's so negative about it, it's going to be really hard to do.
Totally agree. And on the same lines, trying to make it like frame it as an inclusive thing. So how can we include more fruit and vegetables and whole grains and pulses and things like that into your diet? How can we include these things and more protein into your diet as opposed to how can we stop eating certain foods? Just along the same lines of that. And I would say also you've kind of touched on you said something like he eats when he's not hungry and doesn't always feel when he's feel full after meals. if it were me, and it depends on your relationship with the person, I would delve into, you know, great awareness that you're eating when you're not hungry. I wonder what other purpose it's serving for you. If it's not hunger, what is it? Oh, it's boredom. Okay, what can we put in place to help with the boredom at that time? Because you are right. One thing I would say is that it's not uncommon for people in larger bodies to struggle to lose weight just because mechanistically they need X number of calories, and that seems like a lot of calories. It's not any easier for them to lose weight just because they need more food, or they can eat more food, than it is for someone who's 80 kilos and wants to lose weight, even though they get less food, because often they've been in larger bodies for a longer amount of time. There's an increased likelihood that they binge eat. They even have binge eating disorder. Like, these things are more likely when someone's in a larger body. And with obesity comes with a greater risk of things like, or a greater likelihood of like higher adverse childhood events. And so trauma, things like that, these things all coexist. And so on a really kind of calorie deficit level, we can look at this and be like, that doesn't make sense, because logically they can have more calories, and when they move their metabolic rate is higher. And but it's because usually, not always, but there's usually other things going on there for that person. So I don't know what other support that they get, but just on your level, in terms of your scope of practice, just asking questions around like, maybe when they're eating, when they're not hungry, when does that happen? Is it during the day? Is it at nighttime when they're on their own? What alternatives do we have? And digging into that a little bit and providing some sort of alternative tools for coping, I think would be helpful.
Yeah. And I guess for some people, I think it's really useful explaining like the genetic component as well, and that hunger might be dysregulated, and it's not because it, when you've been trying to do it a long time, and obviously I'm like projecting onto this person who I don't know, but you can feel a bit like, there's no hope for me. It will never be any different for me. I'm trying because I'm always going to have to try, but I don't actually think I can do it. It's such a negative like mindset to be in. If you can get them excited about it again, if you can get them to believe that, yeah, do you know what? The reason you've struggled is because it genuinely is harder for you, or it might be. And there are these factors that other people don't consider, and that's okay. And we're going to figure out a way to do it. But you're absolutely capable of this, and you're not a failure because it's been harder for you. The likelihood is the people that found it easier to lose weight probably was easier for them. Like, that is genuinely true as well, right? So that, and then even explaining everything that Amelia just said as well, like there are loads of things that could be going on here. It's not, yeah, I think so many people just make it that they have failed because someone else found it easier. And it's not an even playing field for so many reasons.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that can sometimes help as well.
Okay. Also, leptin. Love that lecture on this, and I've been finding material to read more on it as I find it very interesting. Could it be leptin resistant with the person just mentioned? How do you increase leptin? Is it something that can be obtained again, but over time?
You don't want to increase leptin, because the problem at the moment is likely, I mean, if someone is leptin resistant, and remember that's just a spectrum, it's not like you are leptin resistant or you're not. Same with insulin sensitivity and insulin resistance, like, you know, it's all on like a scale, right? So if they are a little bit leptin resistant, which basically means a bit of hunger dysregulation, so they'll have a higher drive to eat than what we might expect given the amount of body fat that they have, or their like leptin levels, then the best way to become more leptin sensitive is unfortunately to lose weight, right? And to exercise, much like with insulin resistance. So there's nothing that you'd want to do. You wouldn't want to inject more leptin. I think I spoke about this in the lecture, but when leptin was first kind of discovered, people thought it was the cure to obesity. You can just inject people with more leptin, then they'll, you know, stop eating as much, and then there won't be a problem. But then you become resistant to this, so there is still a problem. Yeah. But that might be something as well that you want to explain to an extent to them, like not overcomplicating anything. But you could be like, you know, when you've been overweight for a while, you do become less sensitive to your hunger signals. That might be why you're still hungry, even though you don't need as much food. But that is something that will improve. You know, I think the reason that I sometimes explain that to clients is because it won't always be this hard. If you're really hungry, you know, it doesn't mean that you'll always be really hungry. Because I think the what's the common narrative, or like the kind of like most basic explanation would be like, well, you know, if I'm hungry now, I'm only going to get hungrier as I lose weight because I'll have to drop my calories, or I'm only going to get hungrier the longer that I diet. And that's not necessarily true. You know, you become more sensitive to your hunger signals, and then actually you are more consistent. Another way to talk about this as well would just be, it does sound like they need something different, right? So you could also talk about circadian rhythm, and you could be like, let's try and get consistent meal times, right? Even, and that just might make them less likely to snack, less likely to overeat in the evenings. If you're like, right, if we can get consistent with a breakfast, a lunch, and a dinner, maybe we could sway more of those calories towards the start of the day. And there's rationale behind that, and there's reasons that you might be doing that and why that might help. And actually, it probably would help this person because probably most likely to overeat in the evening. And it's probably because they wake up every morning and they're like, this is the day I'm going to diet really hard all day. And then shockingly, by the evening, they're really hungry and they end up overeating. You know, if you can give some rationale as to why you want to try this different approach, that might be a good approach to take as well.
I've been working with another client who primarily is just the training side, sees me once a week, but talks about nutrition. Currently trying to lose weight, but he says he wants to gain muscle, so finds he's eating more due to exercising with the mentality of, I'm exercising so I can eat more. I suggested he just focus on protein to ensure to keep lean muscle tissue and to focus on energy in, pausing between bites to experience the flavors and textures and to register his full. As he has a poor relationship with food and doesn't feel full sometimes. Am I on the right lines in terms of guiding him?
Sorry, is this the same person?
No, this is someone else. It's the same person who asked the question, but it's someone else.
Okay. Do you want to start? Because I really need a wee.
I would explain to them like the realities of gaining muscle and losing fat. And obviously, depend on where this person is, if they are new to lifting, then it's much easier to gain muscle and lose fat at the same time. But for a lot of people, it depends how much they like what they value as most important, right? For a lot of people, yes, just being at like rough maintenance calories and weight training, getting enough protein. Be more mindful, which you've explained, they will see slight body recomposition over time, and that's great. But if someone really is like, I really want to maximize my muscle gain, and then I really want to focus on fat loss or vice versa, then I would explain like what we're probably better doing is maybe focusing on one and then the other if you really want to see those more obvious distinctions in like fat loss and muscle gain. But if it's more like lifestyle, then do both at the same time is fine. But I do think having that conversation and explain to them because there's nothing worse than him being like, I want fat loss and then overeating and then feeling I don't mean overeating mindlessly, I just mean like overeating and then feeling like they're not making any progress on their fat loss goals. But then like in their head they're like, yeah, but it's good for my strength or it's good for my muscle mass. And then they're just going round in circles. That's going to get really demoralizing really, really fast. So it's fine to do it in that kind of maintenance-ish way, but it's managing their expectations.
Great.
If someone wasn't losing body fat, where do you start? More neat, calories adjusting. I would say watch the lecture that Emma did on adherence in the other in the what's the word I'm looking for?
Webinar.
Yes, the webinar. And we could put a link to underneath and watch that because Emma went through basically all the
Step by
reasons.
step, exactly what you need to do. And also, whether you would increase NEAT or not probably depends on, you know, if you're like, oh, should I increase NEAT? They do about 3,000 steps a day. Like, yes. But if you're like, they're already doing 12,000 steps a day or something, like, no, probably not.
I hear so many people as do yourself and everyone on here, I'm sure, say, quote unquote, they have been good when it comes to eating, quote unquote, healthier or exercise. Then after doing what they deem as good and not seeing change, they see it as not being good or the good not working. I've tried to help reframe and ask them what they feel is good, what else it could mean, try see it as how it aligns with their goal, who they want to be, and ways I've explored with myself for this sort of thing. Am I on the right lines to take them away from the word good? What other ways can help reframe? Not sure I understand this. Do you mean maybe moving away from like the good or bad mentality of things? Maybe.
Yeah, to what degree is it in line with my goals? The other thing is, like, not every day will be, and I think it's setting those expectations as well. You know, I try, like, my goal is to live as many days as possible, as in line with my values as possible, right? It is completely unrealistic to be able to end every day and be like, I made every single decision today in line with my values. And like, it's just not, it's not going to happen, right? And you also won't make decisions around food that are always in line with your goal. So I guess it's setting those expectations, but maybe the dichotomy of like good, bad, maybe it could be more to do with like, well, did that choice move me closer to my goal or further away from my goal? And actually both are fine, but it's kind of like owning the outcome of that. Like, ah, today, like I might have moved further away from my goal, but maybe I lived in line with my values, which was to spend time with someone and not worry about food for that day or whatever, like, you know, something else was more important. I didn't go to the gym, but my kids had to be picked up from school early. Like, fine. There's nothing you can do about that.
Yeah. I err probably, if I get what you're saying, I probably err towards like, I'll ask things like, how mindful do you feel like you are on the whole? And in the explanation of that check-in question, I'll say things like mindful of food choices, mindful of mindful when you were eating, mindful of your thought. I try and give explanations. And so you could maybe say something like, you know, how mindful of your goals were you when it came to your food choices or something like that. Like, yeah, I was mindful of my goals, but I also really wanted to go out the weekend. So like, I probably like let that slip a little bit. Fine. It's not like they did something bad or they were being good or bad. It was just like they chose something else to do. I think that can be quite helpful. I think really a lot of this is how you affirm things and summarize things back to people. So if they're like, you know, I had a really good day with my food, I ate really healthy, and then I had a really bad day because I had pizza, and then what you can say, like, you can reframe it back and say, okay, so what you're saying is there were like on Monday you felt like it was quite easy to make healthful choices, but at the weekend you found yourself eating foods that maybe were not necessarily like eating in a way that wasn't in line with your values. Is that right? Like, the power is in your word choice and the way that you talk about things and how you summarize things back to people. There's like, that's going to have an impact on them without you kind of saying, don't use the word good, don't use the word bad, don't use these words. Just you consistently repeating it in your feedback, in your social media content, in your podcast, whatever it is that you do. I think that's more powerful than trying to get them specifically to change a word they use.
Yeah, I may be pointing that stuff out, just like how impactful how you speak to yourself is. I read something, this isn't my words, it was, I think it was like a tweet that I read recently, and it was talking about like the intensity of the words that you use and how like it might, you might not notice it, but it'll impact your like your subconscious, right? So instead of saying like, oh, I'm absolutely terrified, like, oh, I'm a bit nervous about this, or like, I don't know, even if you, even just like the way you speak to other people about like, oh, how are you, say, oh, pretty freaking like awful. It's like, you're not really, aren't you? Like, you know, like, but think about like, if you're telling yourself that consistently, then you do start to feel it. Or, you know, like, how's your nutrition been? Absolutely horrendous. Has it though? Like, okay, well, tell me about that. Oh, well, breakfast was good, but then at lunchtime I ate a baguette and I shouldn't have it. It's like, what's horrendous about it? And like, well, you know, bread. And you kind of just unpack these things. And it's like, well, stop telling yourself that it was horrendous, because then you start behaving like it was and you catastrophize things. And then in your mind, you're like, you know, if you've said to yourself, my diet is horrendous, okay, well then how are you doing on your fat loss journey, or how are you doing on your health promoting diet or whatever it is, you have negative connotations of that. So I guess reminding yourself of how, like, how you speak to yourself.
Three. Okay. Rebecca's question. Advice for supporting a client who, when she is with certain family members, feels rebellious against her food relationship and some of this work and excuses her behaviours. Some of this she notices is out of fear, as the family member once had anorexia, so doesn't want to bring up food, but now has the awareness that this isn't supportive for her goals. When she is with a family member, no, when she is with a certain family, feels rebellious against her food relationship and excuses her behaviors. I don't know if I totally understand this.
I think it, to me, it sounds like overeats, and then is kind of like, well, I don't want to undereat because someone was once anorexic.
Yeah, maybe.
I actually think saying that back to her, obviously not like the way I just said it, with a bit more context of, so what you're saying is, when you're with your with that side of the family or whatever, you overeat, and the reason for that is, or I don't know, like maybe try and get her to explain it to you. And then kind of say it back to her and be like, is that right? Like, let's unpack, like, you know, why are you doing that? Like, what logic is there behind that? Or is it
Yeah.
more an excuse because you want to overeat? And if it is, then like, are you feeling restricted in other ways? Like, are you giving yourself unconditional permission to eat?
That's such a good point. Yeah, and I think sort of saying like, what is it about that situation that you feel is your role to, do you feel like you're pleasing other people by eating in that way, or do you feel like you're pleasing yourself? And then see what they say, and then be like, okay, what's more in line with your values? Come back to that. Like, is it pleasing other people, or is it pleasing yourself? Okay, well, how are we going to change that? And just kind of helping her to get to that point of, it sounds a little bit like people pleasing, but like obviously you don't want to just say that to her outright. Yeah. I think that's kind of it. Okay, let's leave it there. We've got a couple more, but we will crack on with these next week. I will write underneath, this is where we are, in capitals so we remember. Okay, thanks.
Thanks. Bye.